Welcome to the J.P. Shattered Podcast. Today is Thursday, September 14th, and we're getting set for week two of the NFL season. The Jags and the Titans coming up Sunday at Everbank Field, and today we preview the home opener. We'll sit down with Florida Times Union Jaguars beat writer Ryan O'Halloran and see where he thinks this team stands. And we'll get an early look at the Titans with their radio voice, Mike Keith. Let's get to it with a review of the first day of work Wednesday, looking ahead to the Titans. The Jags offense put together an outstanding performance last week, dominating the line of scrimmage against the Texans and producing 155 yards on the ground. This week, another task is ahead of them. And for the Titans up front, Jarrell Casey leads the way. He's in his seventh NFL season, a third-round pick back in 2011, and a two-time Pro Bowler, including last season. For Jaguars head coach Doug Marrone, Jarrell Casey might be a focal point of Titans defensive coordinator Dick LeBeau's unit, but he's not the only one.
He has strength. He has quickness. You know, obviously he has the ability to rush the passer, which is, you know, the one thing I think that always kind of separates, you know what I'm saying, the bigger inside players. You know, but he's not the only one in there. I mean, they do a nice job, I think. You know, Williams is there at nose. He's a good football player. Daquan Jones, I've known for a long period of time. I went to high school with his dad. You know, they have the corner coming back for him, you know, the good players at corner. You know, Searcy will probably play safety, who obviously I was with in Buffalo. I have a lot of respect for. And their linebackers are big, strong, fast, create turnovers. So, you know, for us, and then obviously going against Coach LeBeau schematically, you know, I've always thought that he's been the toughest, you know, coordinator to go against when it comes from a standpoint of protection. So I think he does an outstanding job in his packages. And obviously, I've always thought he's probably one of the top defensive coordinators in the league.
We'll get a good look to see how good this offensive line is. They've got a chance this week to prove that it wasn't a one-off last week against the Texans. That offensive line also protected quarterback Blake Bortles. He was not sacked last week, and the offense was effective overall in moving the football. For Bortles, an even-keeled approach is nice, but it's much easier around here when you win.
I think it's hard to ignore. You know, you like to say you treat, you know, adversity and prosperity the same way, and you treat the win the same as a loss. You learn from it and move on. But when you put in a lot of work and you do a lot of different things, and then there's hard evidence that it worked. We went out and we won. So what we did worked. I think that adds a little confidence and, you know, gives you a little extra juice. And, you know, you have a little extra pep in your step for sure.
Now to the other side. How do the Jaguars defend a mobile quarterback like Marcus Mariota? It's a similar feel to Deshaun Watson in the second half last week, but we've seen this Mariota story before. Lose contain, and he'll burn you for a long gain on the ground. And that puts some pressure on a unit that collected 10 sacks last week, which is a franchise record. But since then, the Jaguars' Twitter name has changed to Saxonville. For Calais Campbell, he doesn't mind it at all.
Yeah, that's pretty dope. Yeah, I liked it a lot. You know, hopefully we can keep it going. You know, like I said, it doesn't mean anything, though, if you don't go out there and produce the next time. You know, you're only as good as your latest memory. So, yeah, it's week in and week out. You got to go ahead and make it happen.
Campbell collected a franchise record 4 sacks in last week's game, and it capped off an offseason and preseason where the free agent addition came into Jacksonville and quickly became a leader in that locker room. And for the Jags head coach, that's pretty rare.
I've always said this about this league. I think that if you've done a good job and if you played well and you walk into a locker room, you have 10 seconds of respect. So I think that what happens is the players know and understand, you know, that player comes in and, okay, he's done a lot of great things where he is. So when you walk into the locker room, people say, okay, I respect him. But then after that, you have to earn it. And I think that's where Calais and a lot of our players have done a good job of coming in there and making sure that they're communicating that, you know, they're happy to be part of something. They were brought in here to help our team and to be able to support it and make us better, not the thought process of, hey, you guys just follow me and I'm going to be, you know, we're going to be fine if you do things my way. So I think it's more of a factor of him coming in and really doing a good job communicating to his teammates. And then obviously we know coming in he was an outstanding player, but I think more of his communication and the way he implemented himself with the team, not just on defense, but all around offense, defense, all the players, all the coaches. You know, I just think that's an outstanding trait. I think that's very difficult for some people to do. but he's just a really good person. He really is. And he obviously is a very good football player.
Well, the man who asked that question of Jaguars head coach Doug Marrone was Florida Times Union Jaguars beat writer Ryan O'Halloran, who joins us now. What's up, Ryan O?
JP, it's good to be back in town.
Yeah, you were gone for a while.
Yeah, this was a 5-day trip, but we got back Tuesday. And then leave for London next Wednesday. But looking forward to this home opener.
Well, yeah, London is next week. Unbelievable. Yeah. A week from today, the team's leaving to go to London. I can't believe it.
That game gets earlier each year.
It does, which is probably a good thing weather-wise because you know, October, November, it's a little hairy over there in London. Let's start off with Calais Campbell. You asked a great question of Doug Marrone, and he gave about a minute and a half answer there on how he has come in quickly to the organization. You know, it takes a little time sometimes for the players look at play on the field of a veteran. Say, okay, great. You get 10 seconds worth of acknowledgement of that. Then you have to go prove it again. Calais Campbell's proven it day after day after day already. We've only played one game.
Yeah. And I've never seen anything like this in terms of a guy having this kind of presence this quickly. And I've covered – this is my 14th year covering the league. And you know, this is a texting society between players, between media, everything. And when Campbell signed here, I'm sure Cardinals players reached out to Jaguar players. Arizona media reached out to me saying, hey, this guy is going to be the leader. So he came in with a good reputation, and this was a roster looking to be led. They have not had a lot of success, as we know. Campbell had played in a Super Bowl as a rookie, NFC Championship game 2 years ago. So by example, by words, by the end of OTAs, you could say he was a revered presence in this room. Then he goes, has 4 sacks. So that's the, you know, the leadership's a bonus, but he is still a dang good player for 30 years old.
4 sacks. They had 10 for the day, and this is a part of the Jaguars defense that we were kind of questioning. Is it going to come around, the pass rush for this team? Well, at least for 1 week, it did. You had Dante Fowler getting back there. Yannick Ngakoue got back there. McCray at the end of the game had 2 to make it 10. So it was a collective pass rush, which is what this team really needs.
Yeah, a couple things on that is half their sacks came with a 4-man rush. Okay, that's good.
Yeah.
A couple of the sacks were like 4.5, 5 seconds. That means coverage on the back end is good. So that's a positive. But here's the thing, and everybody like maybe poo-pooed it a little bit. Well, Houston's left tackle is holding out, and their guards were iffy. I say that, so what? Because this is an organization in past years that hasn't been able to take advantage of that matchup. You're supposed to dominate, not 10 sacks. That's an anomaly. You know, that's a team record. But when you have a one-on-one that you like, you attack it. And if you have the coverage on the back end, you blitz 32% of the time like Todd Wash did. So the Texans were basically scrambling from the first drive of the game to hold down the fort, and then when they started to chase the game, that played right into Todd Wash's hands.
And they made Dwayne Brown a lot of money, probably.
Yeah, I mean, if you're him, like, you dig in your heels even more now.
Absolutely.
It's like, okay, I have all the leverage because you have a rookie quarterback, and the guys replacing me stink.
Ryan O'Halloran is with us from the Florida Times Union. This offensive line was under the microscope in the preseason training camp with the Brandon Albert situation. Cam Robinson's a rookie. The guards did not look good in the preseason at all. Brandon Linder was the bell cow in the middle, and that's really the basic thing you had to hang your hat on in this preseason. Then they come out week one and just physically dominate one of the great front sevens in football.
Yeah.
How did that happen?
Well, you're a baseball guy, so I got to refer to the Joaquin Andujar quote from the 80s. He said, you can sum up baseball in 2 words. You never know.
That's right.
Yeah. you don't know how it's going to come together. And, you know, people were saying, well, you're criticizing the line. So is the head football coach.
True.
You know, he said last night, he goes, they got to play better. They have to be more consistent. There wasn't a lot of evidence during the preseason for you to talk about, for me to write about, hey, this unit is on the right track, because Jeremy Parnell was nicked up. AJ Cann had 3 penalties in a preseason game. We didn't know until 2 days before the game who the left guard was. So there wasn't more than a shred of evidence to say, okay, this group is moving in the right way. Then they come out and have that kind of performance. You know, it helps that there's only like 22 dropbacks or something like that. So the next step for this line is, can they clean up some of the things in the run game to make sure Leonard Fournette goes 26 for 125 next time?
Yeah, that's the other great point about this football game was they ran the ball. They had the rookie running back, the first-round draft pick, do everything that was advertised in this game, and did it with effectiveness and did it with ease at times. You know, he didn't break away for the long 70-yard run. He ran it 26 times in the game, touched it three more times through the air. Fournette is the focal point of this offense, and I think that's pretty easy to see.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, 39 snaps, 29 touches. I mean, so he was in the game, he's going to get the ball. Yeah. You know, the thing that sticks out about Fournette is the yards after contact. Went back and watched it, so he had 61 of his 100 yards came after contact. That means he doesn't go down easily. And also means maybe the blocking, you know, if that gets better, he'll even have more room to run. It just looks different when he carries it. It looks faster. It looks, then the cuts are crisper, and he always gets you something. You know, if he's hit behind the line of scrimmage, he'll you know, power his way to 2 and 3 yards. You know, if there's a little bit of a crease, he'll get 5. Okay, now all of a sudden you're in 2nd and 5. Not in previous years, 2nd and 9 in a passing situation. So as he gets more comfortable, I think he'll start to break some of those gains. I really like that. I really like him in the screen game because I've talked to him about this a couple of times. That's almost like a free touch. You know, get him in the open field against the corner. You know, to him, that's nothing. So implement him that way. 26 carries a game, that's not going to last. You have TJ Yeldon potentially coming back Sunday. Maybe that's less third down work for Leonard. So for Fournette, as advertised, would be the best way to put it.
For the poor safety who came up and run support early in the game, he knows all about it now, too.
Andre Howell, did you get a license plate?
No doubt. I asked you this on the other day when we spoke out of the food trucks, actually, right after the hurricane here at Everbank Field. Is this team good? Is this Jaguars team good right now?
Yeah, that's the big question this week, and been getting that a lot. My worked-on answer is they can win Sunday and go 2-0. I still wouldn't know, but it sure as hell makes things interesting because this division is maybe worse than we thought. I mean, Indianapolis, I didn't think was going to be very good. They look terrible.
Yes.
Houston, if I'm Houston, I stick with Watson and bite the bullet. You know, hey, if you're going to go 4-12 with Tom Savage or Deshaun Watson, to me that's a no-brainer. You get the kid his snaps. And Tennessee, they just looked sloppy against Oakland last week, and they're going to come here with a sense of urgency. So, I mean, I think are they good? I think on defense they showed a lot of signs for that. On offense, the running game showed some signs. You know, you still don't know what you're going to see for the passing game. The Allen Robinson thing is a huge loss because you're looking at 75 catches, 125 targets minimum. So that you have to replace that. So, you know, the first weak sign is, okay, they are better than I anticipated, but they still have a lot of proving to do.
A lot of proving. We've got a lot of reading to do of your work ahead this week. Thanks for your time, Ryan.
All right, JP, I appreciate it.
Our thanks to Florida Times Union beat writer Ryan O'Halloran for his time Thursday afternoon. Now to the Titans' point of view. Mike Keith has been the voice of the Titans since their move from Houston and has obviously seen every game in the rivalry. Another big one is coming this Sunday.
Important because it's AFC South already, and the Jaguars have a chance to put themselves in prime position with a win to be not only 2-0, but to be 2-0 in the AFC South, you know, just a couple weeks into this thing. It has a lot of ramifications early on, and the Titans certainly found that out a year ago when they finished the year 9-7 like Houston. But Houston was 5-1 in the division, and Tennessee was 2-4, so the Texans went to the playoffs. It's been one of the big messages this offseason is this Titans team, if they want to take a step, they've got to win division games in a bigger way than they have in recent years. So a lot on the line for both teams, even though it's week two.
Yeah, week two, a week one loss to the Oakland Raiders, 26-16. I don't know if I believe much in must-win games, certainly not in September, but it's a big one for Tennessee.
It's important, you know, because you don't want to start 0-2. It does not mean if they do, their year is over. It does not mean that, you know, all of the progress that the Titans made last year comes to an end and that you start asking all sorts of wild questions. But sure, I mean, it's a much easier climb if you're 1-1 than if you're 0-2. And you understand that, you know, this series has that college rivalry feel. It always does. We've seen both of these teams, when they shouldn't win, win. And we've seen both of these teams, when they definitely should win, not win, because it just has that feel about it. So you understand you're getting into something very important. And what we knew, and I told everybody who would listen to me the entire offseason, I feel like the Jaguars are the Titans of 2017, meaning the Titans last year took a huge jump. And honestly, I believe that was because they weren't as bad in 2015 as what their record indicated. I think the same is true with the Jaguars. I think the Jaguars are going to make a big jump this year. I think they have a realistic shot to win this division because they were not as bad a team in 2016 as what their record showed.
Mike Keith with us from the Tennessee Titans. I'm sitting here looking at the stats from last week's Raiders-Titans game, and I see DeMarco Murray, 12 for 44. Derrick Henry, 6 for 25 yards. Mariota, 3 for 26, and the only touchdown. Is exotic smash mouth still a thing in Nashville?
I think they certainly want to believe it is. The run-pass balance got out of effect, which is something that they are very big into, is keeping that run-pass balance where it needs to be. And, you know, you're not going to run more than you pass every game, but you want to stay within that margin. A 41-21 balance pass to run is not where the Titans want to be.
No.
It's not the style of football that they want to play based on what they're doing, not only offensively, but defensively. You know, they want to win time of possession. They have a formula, and part of that comes from staying with the run. Now, some of that occurred because the Titans were consistently behind in this game.
Yes.
Had the Titans scored a touchdown instead of kicking a field goal in the final minute of the first half, and had they taken a lead, I think that run-pass balance ends up being very different. But because they were behind, and then when they fell two scores behind, they had to abandon the run. While the Titans have personnel to throw it better than they have in the past, it's still not what they want to do down after down after down. Mike Mularkey believes in running the football. They want that balance.
Yeah, we've seen that here. He's going to throw a couple tight ends out there and go to town in the run game if he can, no doubt. Mike Keith is with us. Marcus Mariota broke his leg here in Jacksonville last December. How has the recovery process gone for him? There are stages when you come back from an injury like that. The confidence takes a little time once you've, especially if you're a mobile quarterback, to get back, right?
When we saw the 10-yard touchdown run in the ball game the other day, I think anybody who had questions had those questions answered when he turned the corner and flashed the speed once again. The speed is back. The key to Marcus Mariota's recovery actually came in May and June. He was cleared, surprisingly to some, to take part in the organized team activities and the mandatory minicamp. Marcus did not miss a day. And with an injury like that, you figure, well, he's going to have a little soreness. You know, he may have to take a day off here or there. But we saw his confidence grow from the start of OTAs to the end of the final minicamp. We saw him take major, major steps. He was playing with no speed. He was very deliberate to start with. And by the end, he looked like Marcus Mariota again, to the point that when training camp started, he was fully cleared for everything. And they have not held him back in one area throughout training camp or now into the regular season. So I think it's pretty obvious this is a guy who worked his rehab very hard, and the Titans worked with him because they wanted to get him back into things as fast as possible so he would have that confidence that you speak of. And that's a big part of it. You know, that's a big part of any sort of recovery from surgery. It may not feel right away, but you have to trust it. He left June trusting it to where when he got back here at the end of July into early August, he could be full go.
Hear more from Mike Keith this Sunday in the Publix Tailgate Show on 1010XL. That starts at 10 a.m. on 1010XL, Jaguars.com, and the Jaguars app. Also, congratulations go out to Tony Boselli, Jimmy Smith, and Fred Taylor. All are among a group of over 100 nominated for Pro Football Hall of Fame consideration. They'll narrow it down to semifinalists a little later in the year. Boselli was a finalist last year and has a good chance to get in this year. Jimmy Smith has been nominated before. It's the first time for our good friend Fred Taylor.
I got the Cheshire Cat grin. the little Cheshire Cat smile going on right now. I mean, it's great. You know, it's an honor, definitely a privilege. It means a lot. I mean, I know it's just the beginning, but I remember going out to Twitter and ranting a couple months ago, just wanting to be in the conversation. And it seems that someone heard me. You know, I don't know how all of it will play out, but just to be mentioned and in a nomination, it's great. You know, hopefully at some point those voters, they'll be able to look at my package, what I did throughout my years, and hopefully they'll be able to say, you know what, this guy's deserving. He played the game with integrity, did it the right way. His numbers speak for themselves. Hopefully I'll get the nod at some point. So it's a great feeling right now at the moment.
As always, we'll have Fred Taylor on Countdown to Kickoff leading up to the Week 2 matchup against the Titans and on Jaguars postgame to break down what hopefully is a Jaguars win. Also on Countdown to Kickoff this week, Jaguars owner Shad Khan will join us at the very top of the show. That's high noon on the Jaguars Radio Network, Jaguars.com, and the Jaguars app. Finally, the ticket distribution process for this Sunday's game is underway, and earlier this week, the Jaguars announced that 5,000 tickets for this game will be donated to first responders and people impacted by Hurricane Irma. And yesterday, I was honored to be part of a group with the Roar of the Jaguars and Jackson DeVille that went out to a few different locations around downtown to deliver tickets firsthand to those who are on the front lines. We stopped at Fire Station Number 4, the Emergency Operations Center, to visit the JSO, and then it was on to Baptist Hospital in San Marco, where we caught up with the facilities crew there. A group of about 8 guys kept rising floodwaters and waves out of the basement of the main building and away from the generators down in the basement. And without power, the hospital would have been shut down. Well done from those guys. And then finally, we stopped at the Red Cross office in Riverside, but it was pretty empty. Most of the volunteers were actively helping storm victims, and that tells you how recent and how real this has been in Jacksonville. Here's to the folks who stayed up for long shifts in dangerous conditions and helped our citizens through the storm. We hope everyone can get some rest in the coming days and get set to make some noise Sunday at Everbank Field. Thanks again to Ryan O'Halloran and the voice of the Titans, Mike Keith, and as always, thanks to Jaguars manager of radio, Joe Fortunato. Thanks to you for listening to the J.P. Shadrick Podcast.